This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Tan Chung Han and Brian Fernandez with the top business stories of the day. We'll begin with Malaysia's capital markets, which had an exceptionally strong 2017. At 3.2 trillion ringgit, that's more than double Malaysia's GDP, and Malaysia's capital market is said to be the fifth largest in Asia.
Yeah, so over 146 billion ringgit was raised in Malaysia's capital markets last year. Now, that's up 49% from 2016 figures. Now, and according to the chairman of the Securities Commission Malaysia, Tan Sri Ranjit Ajit Singh, that growth was not the ordinary growth. Now, what's ordinary growth? Ordinary growth is basically the five-year average is about 114 billion per annum. So here again, last year, the funds raised amounted to 146.6 billion.
Right. So going beyond the numbers here, you know, what can we infer from this? This shows that there is confidence, not just by investors, but also by corporates or other entities looking to raise funds here on shore. All right. And to illustrate the point, we did see double-digit growth on year across all segments. I'm talking equities, bonds, Islamic capital, total AUM, etc.
And the question, of course, is why?
Well, according to the ESC, the growth is essentially driven by better economic fundamentals, the continuation of an earnings recovery, all the infrastructure projects which required a lot of capital, as well as positive foreign inflows and higher investor participation.
Yeah, so speaking about foreign inflows, yeah, let's look at some data from MIDF Research. So last year, 2017, was the first year of net inflows by foreign investors into Malaysia's equity markets. Okay, so last year, over 10 billion ringgit worth of Malaysian shares net bought by foreign investors. That was our first year of net inflows since 2013. And of course, that was reflected in the FBM KLCI's performance as well. Last year, gained more than 9%, first annual gain since 2013.
Okay, so the question is this going to be sustained? Are we looking forward to this carrying on in the future? What's the outlook for 2018?
Well, the outlook after an exceptionally strong 2017 was essentially, it should moderate somewhat. So 120 billion ringgit is the expected amount for 2018. Higher than the five-year average of 114 billion, but lower than 2017's exceptional 146 billion ringgit.
Yeah, so in Tan Sri Ranjit's words, 2018 is going to be a very good year. Very good, his words. Looking at the equities markets, you know, we have already seen 7 listings so far this year, including the ones on the new LEAP market. The next one coming up will be with GDB Holdings. They are set to make their debut on the ACE market on March 27th.
No, guys, but of course it's an election year. So the SE says that will be driving investor sentiment in the first half of the year.
Driving sentiment positively or negatively?
Well, positively, hopefully.
Well, depends.
Yeah. And also, according to MIDF, after GE14, they expect to see foreign buying of Malaysian shares to pick up again. So that implies essentially that, you know, people are still kind of in the sidelines.
Well, it is an overhang, you know, investors don't like uncertainty. So it's, you know, kind of hard to classify it as positive or negative. You know, it is an overhang in the market. You know, they want to have some resolution to that, find out who's going to have the mandate for the next 5 years, and then they'll plow their money in. This overhang, not just casting a cloud over the capital markets, you're seeing that in retail buying as well, car sales, etc.
Okay. Now, the Securities Commission also said that the ringgit's performance can have an influence on what goes on in capital markets. Sorry.
Yeah, so the Securities Commission says that the current level of the ringgit is widely perceived to be undervalued. And therefore, guys, it provides a great buying opportunity in the Malaysian capital market. So according to Prime Minister Dato' Sri Najib as well, his outlook for the ringgit is very, very bullish. He's expecting it to hit 3.8 ringgit to the US dollar in the near future or the near term.
That's very, very bullish. Well, maybe. Okay. Well, I guess near term is relative because looking at the Bloomberg Surveys median estimate, yes, the ringgit is expected to strengthen all of this year before reaching 3.8 in 2019 through 2020. Is 2019 near term? Well, I guess we'll kind of find out.
Now, at the Securities Commission's press conference yesterday, there was talk about alternative fundraising platforms. And what do we have on that?
Well, Tan Sri Ranjit revealed that about a dozen companies are looking to conduct ICOs, and that's initial coin offerings, and they've had discussions with the Securities Commission. The SC chairman stressed that the companies were looking to the SC, went looking for the SC and not the other way around. So at the moment, it's just discussions. And when it comes to ICOs, the SC's warning of caveat emptor or buyers beware, it's their cautionary stance is still in place.
ICOs are initial coin offerings, is it?
Yes. Okay. That's right. So, you know, the ICO also highlighted the growth of funds raised via the likes of, say, equity crowdfunding, also peer-to-peer or P2P financing. You know, those two mediums, okay, have attracted over 4,000 investors, involved about 650 deals, raising over 70 million ringgit. And we have had, you know, P2P platforms on the Breakfast Grill or on Ringgit and Sense as well. You can always find those podcasts via the BFM app.
And digitization as well remains a key focus for the SC. So the SC has launched a centralized bond and sukuk framework called BIX, that's B-I-X, and there investors can compare pricing and credit information about these bonds all on one platform. So the SC is also looking to digitize the stockbroking industry.
And also there's the highly anticipated, at least by some, the highly anticipated debut of robo-advisors. So the SC chairman revealed yesterday that they hope to issue the first license very soon. Previously that they've communicated, they hope to issue that license within the first half of this year. Yesterday he's saying very soon. And we had a really timely chat about ETFs and also robo advisors on yesterday's episode of Ringgit and Sense. We had a discussion with Julian Ng, former Morning Run presenter, now the CEO and co-founder of Main Street Capital. They are applying to become a robo-advisor.
There's life after BFM, clearly. Oh.
Yeah, but guys, you know, could robo-advisors really threaten the growth of this mammoth unit trust industry?
Yeah, well, I guess if you compare numbers, you know, with that are in this Edge article about robo-advisors, you know, for example, unit trust funds, okay, they charge investors a sales fee of up to 5%. And then on top of that, they've got this annual management fee of about 1 to 1.5%, okay? In contrast, if you look at robo-advisors, say the likes of Smartly down in Singapore, they do not impose a sales fee, so no sales fee, and they only charge investors an annual fee of 0.5 to 1% in Singapore. So you do the math there.
Okay, robo-advisors, robo-radio announcers soon, maybe. Definitely not.
Hopefully
robo
not.
Not robo-children. Now, it's not just the Malaysia's, not just Malaysia's capital markets are facing a digital threat. Also, future generations of Toys R Us kids. Toys R Us is set to shut down hundreds of stores across the world, which could leave tens of thousands without jobs. I think over 30,000 is the number that's been bandied about.
Right. So let's start with the U.S. operations. Okay. So Toys R Us Inc. actually filed for bankruptcy in the U.S. back in September. Their turnaround plan didn't work out. They started missing payments to suppliers in recent days. And now, they have filed a motion trying to get the court's approval to wind down its business.
Okay. So what went wrong with Toys R Us? I know there are many kids out there crying their little eyes out. What went wrong?
I think it's the older ones, you know, who have that connection with Toys R Us. We are the ones doing the crying.
Really?
I am.
But, you know, coming back to your question, Sharad, it all began actually back in 2005. So there was a $7.5 billion leverage buyout by private equity firms, including Bain Capital and KKR. So this is the go-go days of, you know, private equity. And the deal basically loaded Toys R Us with some $5 billion in debt. So the company was actually crippled with interest payments to the tune of about $400 million a year.
All right, so that resulted in a decline in Toys R Us' performance. They couldn't improve their in-store experience. They couldn't, you know, compete with Amazon on the e-commerce stage. And they also, you know, really couldn't just pay their staff well. So those $400 million in interest payments really crippled Toys R Us there. And on top of that, you got to keep in mind, this came at a time of Amazon and all these e-commerce platforms coming online. So,
yes, so
why go to the Toys R Us stores when you can get them online?
Exactly. I mean, that was one thing. It's also the fact that shoppers sort of, children started choosing digital options. So playing with their smartphones, their iPads, and
you know, what about
this
other thing, which is also in part of the conversation about brick and mortar stores, that people are going to the stores, looking at things, but not buying anything. Then go back, having decided they want something, and actually buying it online because it's cheaper.
Yeah, the showrooming, the whole concept of showrooming.
You know, but I don't quite get that, though, because I've had to make several trips to Toys R Us recently. I don't have kids, not for my kids, okay, for the record. But it's for my many friends who are now married and they've got young toddlers, right? So for their birthday parties, I'm going to Toys R Us quite a fair bit. And, you know, I don't get the idea of browsing for these toys and then going home and buying them online.
But
I
might just
if it's,
you know,
online.
It's the saving money option, and also the in-store experience of, you know, should be fun. So I think Toys R Us also missed the boat in terms of building an interactive shopping experience, which then could have differentiated themselves from the online
players.
But
what about this thing? I mean, you bring a child to a toy store and then you tell them, we'll buy it later. I mean, it sounds like a ruse, right? Which child's going to believe you? All right. Yes, Uncle Sharad, you're going to buy it for me later.
And that's when the fits really ensue then, right? Those crying fits. But you're right. So, you know, fundamentally, Toys R Us just could not compete with the price points the likes of Walmart, Target, Amazon were setting. You know? So that, I mean, hence, we've got this decline, or rather the near demise of Toys R Us right now.
Okay, so we're looking at the sudden demise of Toys R Us in the United States, but it's affecting Toys R Us globally. We have news on its UK unit. It's also in trouble.
Yeah, so its UK unit went into bankruptcy, but protection last month. They have been looking for a buyer for it, but guess what? Not a single bid was received, even for part of the retailer. Mm. So Toys R Us UK had to let 67 workers go, and now 25 stores are being shut. But the 75 Toys R Us stores are still left standing. So at least for now, until further notice.
And then what about the rest of the world? Yeah. I mean, especially here in Malaysia.
Okay, well, real quick.
Remember, you know, be gentle. There are kids possibly listening in on this.
Okay, so I'll ease you guys into it, okay? Canada, it's one of the best divisions for Toys R Us. They have received a bid by a group led by MGA Entertainment. Meanwhile, in Central Europe, Toys R Us still looking at their options. For its operations in Asia, under Toys R Us Asia, they said they will be unaffected.
All right. Drum roll there,
yeah,
too.
Well,
okay. Unaffected.
Suspense.
Okay.
Yeah, unaffected.
Okay, so the troubles at Toys R Us, will it have an effect on the broader industry, especially toy makers?
Yes, it will, because it will impact hundreds of toy makers that relied on Toys R Us. So let's give an example of, you know, the big boys, Mattel and Hasbro. Their shares tumbled 10% last week.
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll be back with the opening numbers in the stock market and more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.